This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, Jen.
Hey there. How are you?
You know what today is?
I do. Do you want to tell the good boys and girls what it is?
It is the Our True Crime Podcast third annual first day of the 12 Nightmares Before Christmas.
Woo-hoo!
Did I get enough numbers in there?
I think so.
So this is a big one. This is the third time we've done this. The third year, I guess. Oof, that seems weird, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But what we do is we like to provide all you listeners out there. I don't want to say fun because murder's never fun, but maybe a little bit of a mind
escape
from the stresses of the holiday season. So while you're cooking, cleaning, and wrapping, you can listen to a true crime story brought to you each day, the 12 days before Christmas.
Yep. We're starting today. I believe it's the 13th of December, and it will go until Christmas Eve on the 24th. And each day, the first nightmare before Christmas will have the total of one body count. The second nightmare will have two body counts, and so on and so forth. It's kind of a morbid take on the 12 days of Christmas.
It is.
But
it is.
We've added our own little twist.
And twisted it is, my friend. Twisted
it is.
It is very twisted.
Yes. And I always like to add that this was the brainchild of my oldest daughter, who was 12 at the time she came up with this.
Mm-hmm. So does that tell you anything?
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah.
She's going to be like us, is what it's telling me.
One of us. One of us.
Can you believe?
You want to start?
I was just going to say, can you believe Christmas is almost here? And let's hope to the sweet baby Jesus in the manger that 2021 is a little bit better than 2020. Can we all just?
Yep.
Can we all say
I'm
that?
Sure it's going to start off a lot like 2020, but hopefully as it gets better, 2021 will be greener pastures, more rainbows instead of booze. So
I thought you were going to say rain, but okay. I like the booze fact better.
Yeah. Well, the whole 2020 has pretty much been just boo.
Oh, booze.
That's
I thought
what
you
I
meant
mean.
Booze, like, boo. Give me another shot.
Oh, that works,
that's
too.
That's what I thought you meant.
Yeah, believe me.
Which is funny that...
I think everybody's liver could use a break.
Which is funny you say that, mm-hmm. because that's exactly what this episode is about. It's got lots,
oh, good.
Lots of booze. And booze that
lots
you drink.
Of booze.
Not that you chant at losing
boo.
Games.
Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome.
All right. So you ready to start this little thing? It's a...
Let's do it.
This is an older case, so I tried to have a little bit of fun writing it. And again, murder's never fun. But this one, I mean, you gotta give it to Mike Malloy, let me tell you. So here we go. You ready?
Yep, let's go.
So you know the old line, Jen, that you live by the gun, you die by the gun,
mm-hmm.
right? Or whatever that saying is. Well, this tale has all the markings of a 1930s film noir gangster movie.
Oh.
However,
I like those.
These men are not exactly gangster, not gangster at all. In fact, I think they would have to return their membership card if they had one.
Really?
One guy is more goofy than the next. And, you know, one of my favorite sayings, and if you know me, you know it, is, I swear, you can't make this beep up, right? I always say that. You can't make this stuff up, right? And that's exactly what this story, I can't even. All right, Jen, so sticking with that film idea that I started with, here we go. So the scene opens with a motley crew of rough-looking fellas talking over whiskeys and trying to come up with a way to make some fast, easy cash. Now, the date is July 1932, prohibition still going strong, and the country, the U.S., is not exactly in good financial company. Mm-hmm. All right, we're not doing so well. The Great Depression, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. The setting is in the Bronx as friends, 27-year-old Anthony Tony Marino, a speakeasy proprietor, 28-year-old Joseph Red Murphy, lots of nicknames in this, by the way, who is a former chemist and current bartender at Marino's bar, 24-year-old Francis Pesquea, an undertaker who owned a local nearby funeral home, and 29-year-old Daniel Krisberg, who was a grocer and father of three. Now, the final player is a cab driver named Hershey or Harry Green, but we're going to meet him a little bit later on in the story. For now, you just need to know the main characters.
Okay.
The scene opens as these gentlemen are sitting around in Marino's speakeasy trying to come up with a no-fail plan to make some fast money. They were suggesting several ways to get the money. They could kidnap a kid of a wealthy businessman, but, you know, then they got to deal with the kid. They could rob a bank, but then if they got caught, they'd be doing some pretty hard time in prison, and they didn't want to do that. So then one of these Einsteins has an idea. One word, insurance. You see, Tony Marino suggested it because, after all, he had done it once before. Just a year earlier, Tony had met and befriended a homeless woman or a girlfriend. It depends on which article you read. And so because the story was so old, some of these are, I just kind of chose what I thought was best, right? Like if I could find a second place to say it, because one of them said it was just somebody he picked off the street. Another source said he had dated her for a while. So Tony had met this woman, and her name was Maybell, and they were friendly with each other. And it kind of came about one night when Tony and Francis were talking, and Francis is like, you know what? Why don't you take a life insurance policy out on her? And you know, maybe we'll take care of her and we'll get some money. Mm-hmm. Tony at first is like, I don't know if that's a really, I don't know.
It's the age-old love story right there.
It sure is, right? Mm-hmm. So Francis ended up talking Tony into it, and it was a $2,000 life insurance policy on the woman. So one freezing New York night, the pair would get Maybell good and drunk, take off all her clothes, put her on a mattress, and cover her with water. Well, that dangerous combination killed her, and her death was listed as pneumonia. And Tony collected the money, split it with Francis, with no one the wiser, right? So they'd done this before, and it seemed to work pretty well. So they thought, you know, let's do it again. They did it once, and they think, you know, we can make this one even bigger, even better. So they just need to figure out who to take a policy out on, kill them, and then collect the insurance. Sounds super easy, right? I mean, how hard could it be to find someone that no one would question if he or she met their demise by accident, right?
All right.
So Francis makes the announcement to the group that, guess what? I got the perfect guy for us. Let's pick this fella. You're going to learn his name in a minute, and I'll take care of the rest. So now with the plan in place, they need a victim. As the men sit there, as if scripted, because, you know, that's the theme I'm going with here, a man walks into the speakeasy, just as he always did each and every morning, noon, and night. Mike Malloy bellies up to the bar and in his broken Irish brogue asks for a drink or 12. The men had witnessed Mike Malloy enjoy what he likes to do each and every day, and that is drink himself into oblivion. They felt for sure this would be so easy. So Mike Malloy would be the perfect victim. He was a heavy drinker, a drunk by all who knew him. All they needed to do was to get a policy or two or three on good old Mike, ply him with all the whiskey his little heart and liver could ever want, sit back and watch as he drinks himself to death. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, right, Jen?
You would think so.
After all, this shouldn't take long, and within weeks, they would all be paid in full and then some with that life insurance policy or policies that they collect from, right?
Sometimes it's not that easy, but sure.
Not much was known about poor Mike Malloy. At this time in his life, he was living in a shabby, rundown tenement house far away from the place he once called home, which was County, and I hope I say this right, Donegal, Ireland. If that's wrong, let me know. And I'm sure it probably is.
Donegal?
McGonagall. Yeah. He was believed to be around 60 years old, but no one was quite sure. Now, there was different things that I read that he was as young as 40, as old as 60. But one thing was for sure, and they all said he looked way, way old, because guess what? That's what years of hard drinking does to you, right?
He was probably 18.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Mike was once a firefighter, but that time was long gone, and hard times had hit in the 1920s. He lost his home, but he found the bottle. And what was well known at all the local spots where a man down on his luck could find a little happiness at the bottom of a bottle was that Mike Malloy would be there. So he would find work every once in a while. He would offer to, you know, sweep up floors or clean up parking lots, whatever, in exchange for money. But then the money he would take right back in and buy drink with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody knew Mike in the area, and they would chat him up before he became too drunk to talk. But that was all they could really get from him because, you know, he'd kind of get so obliterated, he couldn't really, they didn't get a lot of information from him. Let's put it that way, right? And then each day, the same pattern would start over, and he would go in, do a little work, get a little money, and get a little drunk. Or a lot drunk in his case, okay? Now, we would have never heard about good old Mike Malloy because, after all, he was just like all the others, down on his luck, like a lot of people back in the 1930s. However, Mike Malloy would live on in infamy as he became the target by a group of, let's call them brainiacs, shall we, who would later become known as the Murder Trust. Now, that's what the newspapers dubbed them later, okay?
But the Murder Trust?
Murder Trust, like, you know. And I don't know why, because they're not real good at what they do. Let's put it that way. So one cold night in December, all the men gathered at a corner table at Marino's bar to finalize the plans. As the men all agreed that they were in on the plan was about to take off. The last to commit was food grocer and father of three, Daniel Kreisberg, who finally caved and decided to do it for his family. Mm-hmm. To make sure all...
Just real quick, trust also means, I looked it up because I knew it was different, an arrangement whereby a person... A trustee holds property as its normal owner for the good of one or more beneficiaries.
Well, thanks, Jen.
So that's what that means by trust.
To make sure all ran as it was supposed to, the motley crew added a few to the mix. John McNally, he was a petty criminal and regular at the bar. Edward, this is my favorite, Edward Tin Ear, Tin, like T-I-N, like the metal, mm-hmm. Smith, who earned this nickname because he had a wax artificial ear.
Mm.
Now, I know what you're saying. Why wouldn't they call him wax ear? That was my question instead of tin ear, but okay. And Tough Tony Bastoni or Bastone. I like Bastoni better. It flows nicer.
It does flow nicer.
And I know what you're going to say. Tony Nardoni. That's the same thing I thought of when I wrote this. And his faithful friend, Joseph Maglione. Just a few Irish and Italian people here.
I was just going to comment on that.
So one cold night in December, they, you know, they're going to get this done and they decide, yep, we're going to go all in. We're all going to do this. The last man to finally commit, like I said, was Daniel. And they were pretty confident that this plan was going to be it. It was going to be quick. It was going to be good. They were going to get money. And who's going to miss good old Mike Malloy? Nobody, right? Francis, as I said earlier, had a agreed to do much of the planning, as if that's hard. Way to go, Francis. He first found a man who called himself Nicholas Mallory. Well, basically, he decided to call him Nicholas Mallory. Okay, there's alternating things in there. But they needed this fella to actually go with him to the insurance companies, the insurance agents, and pretend to be Mike Malloy, right? And broker the deals to get himself covered. Now, again, Nicholas is playing the role of Mike Malloy, right? Because they needed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically like a homeless guy. And hey, you come with me. You agree to be this fella. I'm going to give you a little bit of cash. Okay, right? How hard could that be? So the insurance agent shopping takes about 5 months. Now, that's a lot longer than they thought it would take, right? Just because, you know, sometimes if you're going to be insured and you come with a guy... I don't know. There was a lot of questions floating around. So finally, they were able to secure three different insurance policies after almost 5 months of trying to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
All three policies would offer double indemnity on them. That was good for them.
Very good for them.
Francis hired the bartender at Marino's to identify the deceased and claim to be his next of kin and beneficiary. Super easy. Boy, that Francis, he's a smart one. Then, after all that would occur, all they have to do is go collect the policy money and split the insurance between all of them. The split at this point, they were thinking, would be around, in today's money, is $61,000. But back then, it was $3,576. But today's standard, it would be 61, which is pretty good, I guess.
61,000 or 6,100?
61,000 in today's money. Back then, it was 3,500, see? But look at all these characters in here already, right?
Right.
So it's going to dwindle down. Let's put it that way.
So they get, like, what, 10 grand each?
Not even.
How many are there? Yeah.
So it seemed all pretty cut and dry, of course. But, you know, they had to make a few changes because, you know, these guys, they're smart, Jen. After making some changes, they felt they had a really good, solid plan, and they just needed to sit back and watch and then collect the winnings. Super easy. Tony Marino agreed to give, here we go, Mike an open tab.
Oh.
Drink all that you want, and you can worry about the payment later. So they're thinking, what's this going to take, maybe a day or two?
Yeah, no.
And, you know, he does drink a lot, so... You know, and yeah.
Mr. Malloy isn't a professional drinker. It's going to take a little
bit. He is a professional drinker.
It's going to take more than a day.
Well, Nat, yeah. Of course, Mike felt like he had won the freaking lotto. All the free drinks he could ever want. Heck yes, right? And this couldn't have come at a better time because guess what? Seems that most of the other drinking establishments had cut Mike off because he was unable to pay his drinking tabs. So he would go and run up these tabs. And then try to do a little janitorial work, but then that custodial work he would do would soon get turned into drinks, and then he would not be able to pay off the credit, and then he'd have to go to the next bar down the street, right? So he was over the moon, or over the whiskey glass, however you want to say that, that he got all the free drinks he could ever want. The first night of the plan, well, Jen, was not quite the success that they had all hoped for. Mike comes in, pulls up a stool to the bar, and Tony is ready with a bottle in hand, ready to pour him endless glasses of all the liquor he could ever want. Mike drank one, and then 9, and then 20, never slowing down, not even passing out. When he had finally had enough, he wiped his mouth off, stood up and said, "Thank you, and I'll see you tomorrow."
Yeah, good.
Dumbfounded, the group sat there looking at each other, wondering, how in the heck is he alive, much less standing up and walking out the door? Okay, they agreed. Okay, they needed to give him more. They needed to give him stronger stuff. They needed to adapt the plan a little.
They need to go back to the bootleg liquor where, you know, it was pretty much just straight ethanol.
So the next day, Mike walks in the door and begins drinking nonstop. Once again, Mike doesn't pass out, but walks out only to return the following day. Day 3, Mike repeats what he's been doing. Drinking to his swollen liver's content, walking out only to return the next day. So on the 4th day, the men are, obviously, they're growing a little impatient and they begin to realize that perhaps they need to change it up yet again. Tough Tony suggested, I love Tough Tony because he just, whatever. Tough Tony suggested, hey, let's just shoot him in the head and be done with it. We're wasting a lot of time and money. So after a bit of brainstorming, they come up with yet another plan, a stronger plan. Or stronger alcohol, if you will. Joseph Red Murphy suggested that they sneak in some of that methanol alcohol, gin, also known as wood alcohol, instead of Mike's preferred drink of whiskey and gin. Now, wood alcohol, as you probably know, is used to create fuel and solvents and antifreeze. It's a colorless liquid, and it is volatile, flammable, and unlike ethanol or drinking alcohol, like whiskey, it's poisonous for human consumption. Now, you may know that during the Prohibition, because you just said it, people went to desperate measures to get their drink on, often drinking wood alcohol by accident or on purpose. Now, I found some, again, other articles, because like we've always said, this stuff takes me down the rabbit hole, because half the reason I do this podcast is I'm nosy and I like to learn stuff. So then I went down to find out how this happened, and that took me a couple hours. But anyway, depending on the whatever source, a lot of it said distillers purposely put that in there to knock out people, whereas other sources said the government forced distillers to add that wood alcohol to the drinking alcohol to make it undrinkable. But people were desperate. They'd still go ahead and do it. So Jen, this poisonous alcohol would make the drinker go blind, And this is where the term blind drunk stems from. Just three drinks could cause blindness, paralysis, or death. Hashtag the more you know, right? This is the rabbit hole I go down and I write because I'm a nerd. Okay. They all agreed this is going to be the great foolproof idea they needed. So Joseph Murphy agrees to go to the store, the paint store, just a few doors down, and he's going to bring it back to the bar and he's going to save the day. Now, at first, the men tainted Mike's drinks with wood alcohol, but that didn't seem to faze him. So they just gave him shots of straight wood alcohol, thinking, okay, you know, this is going to be it. He's going to keel over and die any minute. They would serve Malloy not shots tainted with wood alcohol, but wood alcohol straight up. No one could survive this. No one except Mike Malloy. It
asbestos
had to be plastic.
Liver.
As usual, the ragtag team sits in the corner of the bar and they're watching patiently as Mike enjoyed his tainted whiskey after tainted whiskey. They were sure it would only be one more shot, maybe two, and then the deadly symptoms would appear. Instead, the only thing that appeared was the same drunk Mike who appeared each and every day enjoying his now free whiskey / wood alcohol. Mike would drink until he couldn't drink anymore, and then he would leave the speakeasy for the night after his fill. The men were sure that the next night would be the night. Mike Malloy would go to bed and never wake up. But yet, he did it again and again and again. Right?
Over and over and over.
Night after night, Mike would arrive, whether it was Thirsty Thursday, Sunday Fun Day, or Wasted Wednesday, ready to kick back a few dozen shots of wood alcohol. Now the scenario
did Tuesday.
Oh yeah. So the scenario was getting old and the men were starting to get antsy. After all, this little plan was now several months old, and with the insurance premiums and this huge bar tab, not to mention the painting store tab now, he's racking up a lot of money and they're losing money because that's coming off the insurance, right? So the cuts were getting smaller and smaller by the day. Finally, Jen, it happened. Mike Malloy, while sitting on his usual bar stool, as the men watched like turkey vultures, a very inebriated Mike fell off his stool and to the floor. This was it. They did it. Mike Malloy drank himself to death and drank those men into a cash money payment.
With tens of dollars now.
Shocked at first at what they saw, Francis approached Mike and checked for a pulse. It was still there, but it was oh so faint. Francis put his ear to Mike's chest to listen to his heart. Mike's breathing was labored, and you could hear an ever so faint hum. This, they thought, had to be the infamous death rattle. Each of the men let out a deep breath and took a seat to watch as Mike Malloy took his last breath. The death rattle seemed to be getting louder. This is it, they thought. This is it. And then Mike Malloy let out the biggest snore you've ever heard. Mike Malloy was not dead or dying. He was sound asleep and snoring right there in the middle of the tavern floor.
Oh, God love him.
Could you imagine these ding-dongs going, this is it, this is it, and then, you know?
You'd think they'd just finally put a bullet through his head if they were, you know, just get so frustrated.
After a few hours, Mike woke up, and after he got his footing back, he only asked for one thing, Jen. Can I have another shot of that good stuff you've been giving me? With alcohol. He can't even taste the difference.
I'm sure his taste buds are shot.
The assassination wannabe squad decided to meet up again and refigure their plans. This wasn't working. Good old Tough Tony once again griped about why this was taking so long and that one bullet would end it all. Tony Marino mentioned that his tavern was taking a huge hit with all the free liquor that they were shoveling down Rotten Gut Mike and worried about making it out of Prohibition without going bankrupt. The amount of cans that the crew were buying from the paint store were also getting a bit costly, not to mention, sooner or later, those people that run the paint store are going to wonder, why are you always buying a few cans of wood alcohol a night? And yet you come back every day, right?
There's a big project I'm working on.
Yeah, every day. It was the ever astute Francis P. who came up with yet another surefire way to kill this Mike fella. So there was only one thing that Mike liked as much as the drink, and that was seafood. Francis suggested they offer Mike a free entree of oysters. But these would not be just any oysters, Jen. Oh, no, no, no. These oysters would have a 5-day marinade on them of that wood alcohol.
Oh, lovely.
He had read somewhere that one time this guy had died because the oysters, after they marinate for that long, you know, they keep all that wood alcohol in you and then the food stays in your system longer. So it's going to remain in his gut longer, therefore kill him. So just like children who found hidden candy, all the men are smiling slyly. They know they got it. This is it. This is going to be a winner right here. It is going to be a winner.
They're lovely gentlemen,
aren't they? The oyster not-so-delicacy night arrived. As suspected, Mike Malloy could not believe his good fortune about being given this delicious meal to chase down with his free drinks. All of this is free. He can't believe it, right? So the ruffians waited at a nearby table, once again playing cards and keeping an eye on Mike, who was enjoying his food as if it were Thanksgiving Day. The minutes turned to hours, and once again, Mike thanked them all for their generosity, stood up, and shakily made his way to the door. The men sat there looking at each other with blank stares and not saying a word. How could this happen? No one else would have survived one night of this, and here's Mike Malloy, enduring poisoning night after night, and he's living his best life. This is now not so much about the money, since they were losing lots of it, their cut each day, but about pride and doing what they set out to do, right? I mean, this was supposed to be a one and done easy thing, right? Okay, they thought, they need, yet again, more than the wood alcohol. That wood alcohol, you know, it's supposed to cause blindness after only 3 drinks and a human, yet it is not doing a single thing to Mike Malloy. They needed something stronger. They needed a tasty sandwich with rotten sardines. Got a little rotten sardine base, but that's not all. We're going to add some carpet tacks in there. We're going to get them good and drunk. We're going to feed them this, okay?
So you're going to try to feed them carpet tacks?
Yeah, in the sandwich, in the rotten sardine sandwich. So Joseph Murphy took out a can of sardines. This is so disgusting. Like, just the thought of it makes me want to throw up. Opened up a can of sardines and he set it on the counter for 5 days. For 5 days, he let that can of sardines sit there in the open air, get nice and rotten and gross, right? So that night when Mike came in and he was getting good and drunk, Joseph then added some nails and tacks and stirred it up with sardines, smeared it on some bread, and delivered this free sandwich to Mike. At this point, the men, I mean, they are tired of waiting and they basically, they're like standing on top of him, arms crossed, kind of angry. You know, okay, buddy, let's go. Let's do this, right? Good old Mike tears into that sandwich and he loves it. And as soon as he finished that last bite, you know what he did? He licked his fingers, he wiped his mouth, and he asked for another sandwich just like that one because that was so good.
I need to cook for him.
Right?
He'd enjoy the only person who would enjoy my food.
Just like The Sopranos meets Dumb and Dumber, an emergency meeting is called for this group who cannot get the job done. They are all perplexed, but they are also in so deep now, and they need to recoup some of this money, and not to mention all the wasted time over these months trying to get this done. Now, Jen, sometimes you have to stick with what works. Tony Marino suggests they pull a Maybell on Mike. It worked great the first time, so why shouldn't it a second time? Just like they did with Maybell, they're going to get Mike good and sauced up, because that's what he does anyway. They're going to take him out to the park. They're going to pop him up on a park bench, and they're going to, you know, let's say, take his clothes off, pour a lot of water on him, leave him there. He's drunk. He's going to die on that park bench. He's going to freeze to death overnight, right?
It's hypothermia.
It's going to be a winner.
Hey, it worked for the Jack Nicholson and The Shining, so.
That's true. The Brainiacs all felt a sense of relief. They thought, you know what? This is it. We can go back and chill. We finally found a winner. This has to work. So the next day, they're all sitting around, kind of, you know, they're in good spirits thinking, all we got to do is wait for the newspaper to come out and say that, you know, there was a body found in the park. We're all good. Just like always, Mike arrived at the saloon ready for a night of drinking. What? He came back,
go
right?
Mike. God love him.
So now they're like, okay, this isn't going to work. We got to figure something else out. When Mike came into the bar, you know, he was telling them this crazy story that somehow he got to the park bench and he must have fallen asleep and stuff. And he woke up and he didn't really know where he was. But that's okay, because he went back to his house. He got dressed and he's ready to drink now. He's ready to get his drink on again. Well, it's February 1933. It's in, you know, New York City. And this whole adventure started back in July, right? This needed to end, and enter a new guy, right? John McNally. I mean, how many people can we get going on here? John McNally has the surefire way to get this done once and for all.
Sure he does.
Uh-huh. When I say you can't make this shit up, I am not kidding. Like, this gets crazy. And this is a true story. Here's his idea. This is what we're going to do. We're going to get Mike good and drunk yet again, and then we're going to run him over. Accidents happen, right?
All the time.
Uh-huh. But who can do this? Oh, John Maglione. He knows this guy. He has a friend. His name's Hershey, or Harry Green, and he just happens to be a cab driver, Jen. So you know what? We're just going to give him a small cut. Let's say $150 of this insurance windfall we're going to get, and he can run over Mike. It's going to be, he's drunk. They'll just assume that he got drunk and got run over, right?
Mm-hmm. You would think.
Finally, they had a plan that would be a hit. Pun intended. So the men jump into Green's taxi cab and they bring along drunk Mike with them, and they barely can get him in there because he's pretty wasted at this time. So Green drives a few blocks away to a dark road. Bestoni and Murphy drag Mike out and they try to get a good hold on him because he's pretty wasted, right? So you got to picture this with me. So they go and stand in the road. Each of them take an arm with Mike in the middle. So they don't want to get hit. So the idea is sort of like, you know, standing with your arms outreached. They're going to hold him up by his arms, but to the side. And so he's going to be in the middle. Does that make sense? Like, they're each on the side holding him up, his body up by his arms, right? When Green flashes his lights on the car, they need to get prepared for the hit. And so what they'll do is he'll flash the lights. He's going to gun it right at the last second. The two gentlemen are going to hop to the side and bam, Mike gets run over. Perfect, right? This plan.
If it works,
this
perfect.
Plan
yeah.
cannot fail. So the engine revs up and the car gets closer as the headlights are getting brighter when all of a sudden someone yells, stop, screech. Green, the driver, had been startled because a nearby apartment had turned on the light, the room light, the outside light, you know, the porch uh-huh. light, whatever you call it, and it freaked him out. So he stopped. Okay, no problem. They can try it again. I mean, he's still drunk and hard as heck to hold up, but okay. So Green takes that cab, puts it in reverse, backs it up. He's going to try it again, okay? So he's going to flicker his lights and then gun it to the men. Bam, right? And then Bestoni and Murphy are going to dive out of the way and then right mm-hmm. there, right?
Mm-hmm. Drunk people are usually very flexible.
I'm glad you said that, Jen, because when he flickered the lights and he started to gun it, both Bestoni and Murphy dive out of the way. And right behind him, good old Mike. He took a dive too. So yeah, this is the second time they're about to run him over. That was the second time. Okay, let's do it a third time. Here we go.
So third time's charm.
Bestoni and Murphy jump the sides barely out of the speeding cab. But as you said, the third time's a charm, right? I said the third. Mm-hmm. This will be the third attempt. And you know, they always say the third time's a charm. This time Green is flooring it and he reached 50 miles per hour. Mike Malloy was getting closer and closer until bam, Green hit Malloy. And for good measure, Jen, to make
backed
sure
over him?
It backed over him, wanted to make
awesome.
Sure he was good. So he reversed it, went over him again. They did it, Jen. They finally killed Mike Malloy. His body was shoved into the hood before falling to the ground and Green backed over him. So they were sure that they did it. This goofy gang felt positive they had finally killed Mike. With the body on the street, they hurried away in the car because they were scared and they didn't want to get caught, right? So they just left mm-hmm. poor little Mike Malloy there in the road to die. The next,
he had a good run.
Right? Literally. The next day, the finer details were laid out. Joseph Murphy began calling around looking for his, quote, missing brother. So that was the new scheme, right? So Joseph is trying to find his missing brother. Murphy, under the ruse that his brother had been missing for several days, called police stations. Then he called hospitals. Then he called morgues. He was looking for his missing brother. No one could help Murphy with his missing brother because none of them had any information. They didn't have a person that was injured in the hospital, in the morgue, or had been arrested overnight in the police station. So the men of Murder Do Not Trust sit around waiting for the daily newspaper, confident that they're going to see a headline blasted on the front page about a man who had been run over and killed. But the paper came, and there's no such headline. And the next day, and then the next 3 days, then the next week, there's no headline. He's not in the paper.
Did Mike find a new bar to hang out at?
Sort of. So it's now been 5 days since this bird-brained bunch committed murder in exchange for an insurance payout. They finally got rid of their hit. But without a body, they can't call the insurance company. You have to have a body to say that he's dead.
Proof.
To, like, the policy, right?
Or wait till New Year's, right? Isn't that how it goes? Wait till New Year's?
Well, I think it's 7, isn't it? I think it's 7 to be declared dead. But anyway.
I'm lucky enough to not.
But they can't wait 7 years, Jen. They can't wait that long. You know what they need? They need another drunk to kill and start this all over and claim that that was his brother and that person is dead, right? So basically, they lost their first drunk hit. They need another guy, right? So they're.
These men are genius.
Right? So they are sitting around thinking about this. They need to figure out a way to find another homeless drunk to bring into the web. As these not so smart guys are chatting, and it's been, I think, about 3 weeks at this point, tavern door swings open. A man covered in bandages and crutches and scratches and a few broken bones hobbles in and simply states, "I sure am dying for a drink."
Ha! Go Mike!
Mike would fill the air with his wild story. It seems that Mike was apparently run over, but he couldn't hardly remember much. He said he woke up at the Fordham Hospital where he had been for the past several weeks recovering. He told that hospital he was done and he wanted to go back to the bar. And well, he's back.
Oh, I'm sure his recovery was not fun for the nurses either.
Oh, right?
Could you imagine?
No, and he's a hard
coming
drinker.
Coming off that liquor.
Mm-mm.
I'm all surprised that alone didn't kill him.
All right. Well, yeah. Because, yeah, it should. Sadly, Jen, our time with Mike is about to come to an end. On February 21st, 1933, they were finally successful after nine times of trying to kill this man. The men of Menza waited for Mike to pass out yet again. They carried Mike to Marino's apartment above the bar. They attached a hose to Mike's mouth, taped it in, nice and secure, and attached the other end to a running gas line. I believe it was from a gas lamp. An hour later, Mike Malloy took his last breath. A doctor was called in who may or may not have been persuaded by some green to determine that Mike had died from pneumonia.
Nice.
Without wasting a day, they made sure Mike was quickly buried so that they could collect their mother load. Their mother load, Jen, was now $800, courtesy of MetLife.
A piece or each?
You know what?
That's the same thing.
I couldn't really figure it out, altogether. But it was not much, okay?
Lord.
So Marino and Murphy used their money to buy a new suit, which you can probably guess is what they wore to the funeral of Mike Malloy. Now, when the crew went to the Prudential Insurance office to collect the rest of their winnings, because they had three policies, remember? They were greeted with a question that they didn't get from the other insurance company, and that was, when can I see the body? Well, he's already been buried. He's already buried. Well, insurance guy's like, yep, that's going to be an issue. I can't just give you money because you say somebody died, right?
So well, then, would a death certificate help?
I don't know, Jen. You would think so, I guess. I don't know. This is 1933, too, right?
So okay.
I'm not sure
I don't know.
Quite how it worked back then. And I bet this was a huge problem during the Depression, right? What an easy way to make money. So the nerd herd had done it, and they had gotten away with it for a bit until the rumors started flying around. Now, Jen, we all know if you want to commit the perfect crime, you have to do it solo. You have to do it by yourself. Because if you bring one person in, somebody's going to talk. Well, when you bring in this crew of these hoodlums, come on now. People talk, and they did. Well, bragging, really. So it wasn't long before these rumors made it to the police. Now, the decision was made to dig up Mike Malloy and examine his body and, you know, figure out what really killed him. And it wasn't pneumonia. Under a forensic exam, it was determined that he was, in fact, murdered. Lord, which one would it be? You know, is it the tax in a system? Is it the wood alcohol, the abrasions and broken? I mean, who knows, right? So just like a movie, as we end my movie metaphors in here, just like a movie, the men started singing and ratting on each other. Frank, Tony, Daniel, and Joseph were all tried and convicted of first-degree murder. Each one would die in the electric chair at Sing Sing Prison in New York. Sadly for these men, they were not able to cheat death like Mike Malloy. The cabbie, Hershey Green, would be sentenced to life in prison for his part in his eighth failed murder attempt.
Jeez.
And that is the story of the indestructible Mike Malloy.
Wow. Do you think it was worth it?
No. But you know what? I'm sure these Seriously. Men, you know how people are, because I'm just like this. Let me tell you. If you tell me I can't do something and it's not going the way, I'm going to prove you. I want my way. You know that about me. Like, you can't tell me I can't do something. And that, I'm sure that's how it was with them. It wasn't even about the money at the end. It's like, we got to do this. You know what I mean? Like, this is not happening. But yeah.
Also, I mean, seriously, they lost their own life because mm-hmm. of...
And for what? Like, they didn't even get the other insurance policy, so they... For no. nothing. So he drank... Exactly. He drank
a suit.
Alone way more than they even got in the policy.
Right.
So...
It's insane.
Happy...
Insane!
First Nightmare of Christmas.
Well,
first Nightmare
God
before
love
Christmas.
Mike Malone. Cheers to Malloy. Mike Malone.
Malloy. Not Malone.
Him too. Mike Malloy. Cheers to all of them. So Mike anyway, Malone and Mike Malloy.
Yeah, Mike Malloy, buddy. So anyway, I envision this like a movie. You know what I mean? And that's how.
Yeah,
like
I wonder why
head.
That hasn't been made into a
I'm
film.
I'm kind of surprised. Well, I guess they probably run out of stuff. But it would be like I can picture Benicio del Toro. Like I could cast it. I got it. Like he's the, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm telling you, I could do it. And they could, like Maybelle could be somebody cute, like Scarlett Johansson or, you know, Rachel McAdams. I don't know. I'm just saying. Like, I think they should make it a movie.
It should be.
You know, let's Definitely give him some be. Wood alcohol. That'll kill him. No,
Truth
let's just put
than
a
fiction.
Bullet in his head. Yeah. So anyway, that's the story of Mike Malloy, Jen.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. That's a great case.
Yep.
Great way to start out our 12 Nightmares Before Christmas.
I found this case a long time ago, and then I was literally laughing out loud. Like, I'm laughing going, you've got to be kidding me, right? And then I told you that one of my favorite podcasts just did this last week. And I was like, what? And I never listened to this. I never listened before we do this, but I had already written all this. So mm-hmm. mine was already written. So I went ahead and listened to it. And it's almost exactly the same. But like I said, they, you know, there was some debate on Maybelle, the homeless woman, or Maybelle, his girlfriend. So that was, you know what I mean? Like the
right.
Depending on where you got it. That is the story of little Mike.
The things with cases that are that far behind, it's almost gotten to where, especially with Mike Malloy, it's almost folklore now.
Mm-hmm.
So well, it's,
and it's kind
yeah,
of like
very little things.
Nobody
change.
Can really, nobody is from then still. You know what I mean? Like nobody's alive still that was
alive. Exactly.
To see it. So
to let us know.
And nobody really.
Awesome case. Awesome. Loved it. Good
yeah,
job.
Yeah. I got another doozy coming up. And
Can't
I
wait.
Hope everybody is getting ready for the holidays. Hopefully some people can have a little bit of normalcy in their holiday season. I know it's super strange and super weird. And hopefully we bring a
and
little bit of...
It needs to just be over with.
I know,
just
girl.
Needed to stop. But anyway, Merry First Nightmare Before Christmas, y'all.
And yeah, so until tomorrow when Jen introduces the second case, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast, or on Twitter at OurTrueCrimePod. You can email us at OurTrueCrimePodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at OurTrueCrimePodcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
A speakeasy proprietor. I knew I'd have problems with that one. Sorry, let me say that again.
Owner. A speakeasy owner.
I like proprietor better, but whatever. I even spelled it
right.
If
you can't say it, then what, you know.
I'm going to propriet over there and punch you, girl. Here we go. The scene opens and these gentlemen are shitting around. They're just shitting around, Jed. If I have trouble talking today, I'm quitting podcasting. I'm telling you that right now. Right after these 12 days are done.
Right after. I swear.
All three of these policies would offer
had a great-great-granny, I think, that used to have her own little copper distillery out in the woods.
Still?
Oh, yeah. Each actually had people, family in Canada that would run it down to, or so I've heard.
Sure, Jen. Wink, wink. It's in your backyard. We know. You say you have a swimming pool, but
the other day I was watching this show, or just like a YouTube video, and two men bought a house that used to be from bootleggers, and they started to renovate it, and they were pulling bottles of liquor out of the walls that were still there.
Drinkable.
from the bootlegging days. And they just had gone one part of the house, and they'd already found like over 100 bottles still wrapped up, still ready to go. Like brand new.
I guess you can't drink it. I thought that was so cool.
Well, it's whiskey. I mean, I guess you could try.
I don't think I'd want to try it. No, thanks.